This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan.
Welcome to episode 178 of Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. And the song we just heard was called Never Escape the Father's Love. I put that on this broadcast because I'm getting ready to fly across the ocean in a few days. No matter where you go, you can't escape the Father's love. This song reminds me of a time with my earliest group, the Fishermen, in the heyday of the Jesus Movement. We were invited to come to a little town called Hicksville, Ohio, and it sort of lived up to the name, Little Town, Ohio. Some people had rented a movie theater, an old movie theater with wooden seats, and I could just imagine some little lady playing the theme song to Ben-Hur while the silent films were going. But anyway, nothing happened in this town, so there were scads of people showed up. Even a famous ex-rock and roll singer who stayed about 90 seconds and left. I don't think he liked our quality. But anyway, we gave a typical altar call for kids to come forward and receive Christ. And so as they were coming, like just like scores of people were coming and kneeling at the front, one girl got out of her seat. And when she got to the aisle, instead of coming forward, she ran out of the theater and slammed the door with a real dramatic flourish. Okay, so we kept singing. And about 5 or 10 minutes later, the door flew open again and she ran to the altar. And she swore, I won't tell you the word, but she said, "Bleep it. He's out there too. I wanted to run away from him, but he's out there too. I give up." So you can never escape it. You might try, but he still loves you. With that in mind, I want to play another song that came out on a CD that I put out in 1997. This song is called "All the Empty People."
I see them walking down the street. I see them when I go out to eat. I see them standing in the park after dark. I see them on the subway train. I see them at the football game. I see them everywhere that I turn, looking for love, getting burned. All the empty people who are running out of hope, going through the motions. They're not living, they're just trying hard to cope. It's at an epidemic scale. How many victims, no one can tell. It reaches every village and town. Just look around, look around, at all the empty people who are running out of hope. They're going through the motions. Child away from home, they're like a man without a country, so they're on. But the search goes on and on. Jesus saw
I'm sitting here, as I do every Thursday night, in the office of Brian Hoogenboom. Brian just told me something I didn't know, that his friend was from Hicksville, Ohio, and might have been at that concert. So I hope I didn't disparage her hometown with the things I said about it living up to its name. So, Brian, I'm flying out Tuesday with my sweet wife to Dublin, Ireland, and we're going to spend 2 weeks mainly in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland is part of the UK, if some of you don't know your maps. The United Kingdom consists of England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. And my friend Paul Dickens, who's been on this show a time or two, he and his wife are hosting us there, taking us around. The first time we visited Paul, he took us to England and Wales. Second time, we saw England and Scotland. Now he's saying, you're going to see the whole UK. And while we're there in Northern Ireland, we're probably going to go to the town of Londonderry. Now, Londonderry is special for two reasons. One, my father-in-law was stationed there for a short time during World War II. He was a CB. Do you know what a CB is? I'm not sure I do. Don't they work on bill things and that?
The CBs are the Navy's Construction Battalion.
Hence the name CB. Okay. He was a CB. And so he was stationed at a base in Northern Ireland, Londonderry, and then he was deployed to other parts of England. Well, Londonderry is special for something else. There is a famous tune called Londonderry Air. It's probably hundreds and hundreds of years old. Nobody knows who wrote it, but it's a very famous tune. Dottie Rambo, a Christian songwriter, wrote a song to that tune called He Looked Beyond My Fault and Saw My Need, but we know it as Danny Boy. Danny Boy is like the national song of Ireland, but it was actually Northern Ireland. Now, I'm going to do something a little different, Brian. I want us to play Danny Boy just to get in the mood because I'm going over there. But let me tell you about Danny Boy. Danny Boy is really a very sad song because it's the story of a father who is talking to his son. Most people think it's because the son is going off to war. The father, I suppose, is older. And the father doesn't know if he's ever going to see the son again. And so he's sort of saying farewell to him. It's a very touching song. Well, there's all kinds of people that have recorded Danny Boy. But some people are going to love this. Some people are going to think I'm crazy. I want to play the Johnny Cash version. Johnny Cash recorded his version just probably months or like within a year of his death. He was an old man when he recorded it. And I thought it just set up the emotion of really what the song was about. Now, if you don't like this, I've got a little treat for you later on toward the end of the show. But this is Johnny Cash singing Danny Boy.
Danny boy, the pipes are calling. From glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses fallen. It's you, must go and I must bide. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow. or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love you so. But if you come and all the flowers are dying, and I am dead, as dead I will may be, you'll come and find the place where I am lying, and kneel and say an Ave there for me. And I will know, though soft ye tread above me, and then my grave will richer, sweeter be. And you'll bend down and tell me that you love me, and I will rest in peace until you come.
Shadow of the glory of the Lord, looking forward to what is yet to come. But for now, I have found a peaceful path in the shadow of the glory of the Lord. I have chosen to abandon the ambitions of the past in pursuit of things that quickly fade. I have traded them all for a peaceful path in the shadow of the glory of the Lord. Things that used to matter have somehow lost their charm when compared to what shall be revealed. Now we see a shadow, a faint silhouette. One day all our hopes will be fulfilled. Thank you. things that used to matter have somehow lost their charm when compared to what shall be revealed. Now we see a shadow, just a faint silhouette. One day all our hopes will be fulfilled. Living in the shadow of the glory of the Lord, looking forward to what is yet to come. But for now, I have found a peaceful path in the shadow of the glory of the Lord. In the shadow of the glory of the Lord.
That song was inspired when my wife Trish and I went to Scotland with our friends the Dickenses in 2013. Well, we're bringing to a close our series that we've done for the last 2 weeks called Conversations in an Upper Room. This is part 3, and I will tell you in advance, this is probably the most difficult one to deal with. But what we've done is talk about the subjects Jesus discussed with his disciples the night before he was crucified. And that's found in the Gospel of John, chapter 13 through 17. Now, last week, I think it was last week or the week before, we talked about the fact that Jesus said people are going to hate you because you're Christians. And we talked about the fact that there were at least 4 reasons why Christianity will never be popular in the world. You can go back and listen to that if you want to. But I left the 5th one out. And the 4 were because there's things offensive in the Bible to people's perceptions of the modern age and wokeism and blah, blah. But this is another reason why it will never be popular. And that is, Jesus said, if you follow me, you have to love everybody, and you have to forgive everybody. And that will never be popular. Let me just read you some of the things Jesus said before he got to the upper room. Luke 6, this is 27 through 32, and I'm staying with the Good News Translation since that's what we've read so far. Luke 6, 27, Jesus said, "But I tell you who hear me, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. And pray for those who mistreat you." I was just reading my Bible 6 or 8 months ago. I've read this hundreds of times, but I don't know. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I stayed on it. And day after day, I would read it. But Lord, how can we do this? Love your enemies. What about your political enemies? I mean, there's people who are supposedly Christians, and they hate Trump, or they hate Biden. And Jesus says, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. And pray for those who mistreat you. And he goes on to talk about some other things. Then he comes on down here in verse 32 and says, if you love only the people who love you, why should you receive a blessing? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good only to those who do good to you, why should you receive a blessing? Even sinners do that. And then he goes on down a few verses later and says, no, love your enemies and do good to them. Lend and expect nothing back. You'll have a great reward, and you will be children of the Most High God. Now, somebody wrote a book years ago called The Hard Sayings of Jesus. Well, that's one of them. But over in Matthew 6:14, this is part of the Sermon on the Mount,
which I think nobody really takes that seriously, especially the turning the other cheek business. But he said in verse 14 of Matthew 6, if you forgive others the wrongs they have done to you, your Father in heaven will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others, then your Father will not forgive the wrongs you have done. That's never going to be popular. That's hard for me to even read and think about right now. So then we come up to the upper room. This was the last night. So he wanted to really hammer home certain points. So we started it out by getting up from the table and taking his outer garment off and putting a towel around his waist. And this was something that lowly servants did. And they're used to calling him teacher and Lord and rabbi and all the honorable titles. But he takes the garb of a lowly servant and goes around and washes their feet. And that was symbolic, but it was a powerful visual message. Here I am. I'm taking the humble position. I want to serve you, and I want to wash your feet. And he even washed Judas's feet, knowing that Judas was about to betray him. And so then he began to talk to them. Let me read you some verses. This is John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35. He says, and now I give you a new commandment, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. In other words, he's saying, in the same way you've seen me love you, I want you to do that to each other. John 15, verses 9 through 17. Let me just read that to you, and we can talk about it. And keep in mind, this was the same conversation in the same upper room. He said, if you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My commandment is this, love one another, just as I love you. The greatest love you can have for your friends is to give your life for them. And you are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because servants do not know what their master is doing. Instead, I call you friends, because I've told you everything I heard from my Father. You did not choose me. I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit, the kind of fruit that endures. And so the Father will give you whatever you ask of him in my name. This then is what I command you, love one another. Okay, we read those verses, love one another, and sometimes we see those pictures of the Last Supper, and they're all hanging out and kind of hanging over each other and, you know, one big happy family. Fact of the matter is, those guys didn't get along at times. There's several cases in the Bible where they were just kind of at each other's throat. One of them was Peter when he came to Jesus, and he said, and the Bible says, then Peter came to Jesus. And I've always wondered what happened before the word then. But then Peter came to Jesus, and he said, Lord, how many times must my brother sin against me, and I still have to forgive him? Seven times? I have a feeling he had just counted it up, and they had reached the seventh time. He said, no, not seven times, 70 times seven. Come back to me after the 490th time, then we'll talk about it. But that says right there, there was something going on. The guy was offended. And there were at least two times when the disciples got in an argument of who was the greatest. One of them was when they were walking down the road and Jesus asked them, hey, what were you talking about back there? The other time in Luke, they had gotten in an argument in the upper room. In the upper room, right before Jesus washed their feet and all of that. And there was another time when good old James and John, the sons of thunder, brought their mom. And most people think their mom was related to Jesus. A lot of people think it was his aunt. I don't know if that's true or not, but a lot of theologians believe that James and John were cousins to Jesus. So they bring in Aunt Mabel. She comes there. Oh, hi, Aunt Mabel. I've loved you since I was a little boy. What do you want, Aunt Mabel? I don't know if her name was Mabel, but she said, okay, I've got a request for you. And obviously, James and John had put her up to it. She said, when you come into your kingdom, I would like my two little boys to sit by you, one on the right hand and one on the left. What about it? Can you do that for me? And Jesus said, I can't do that for you. Only the Father decides that. But all that's going, like when he says love one another, he's not talking to people that naturally have this great love for each other. I mean, there was a tax collector in there, along with Simon the Zealot, who was a violent rebel against the Roman government. They were all part of the same bunch. And yet he says, I want you to love each other, and I want you to love each other the way I've loved you. You see me pour my life into you. You're going to see me die for you later. I want you to do the same for each other. Wash each other's feet. Love each other. Now, I don't know about you, but that's not easy to do. Okay, Brian, I'm going to put you on the spot. You don't have to name names. Have you ever been? We got Karen here. Brian's wife's here. Have either one of y'all ever been offended by anybody?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
And how about this? Come on now. Some of the sweetest people I've ever met are church people, but some of the meanest, orneriest, political, backstabbing people I've ever met are church people. Can anybody say amen to that? No, I'm not going to do like I saw Robert Blake doing the Tonight Show. You know who I'm talking about. No, but I mean, people in church can do terrible things. I know children of ministers who hate God right now because of the way a deacon board or whatever treated their fathers. But Jesus said, we have to love them. You didn't answer, Brian. You made your wife answer. Did you answer?
Answer what?
You ever been offended by somebody and it was hard to forgive?
I answered on the inside.
Okay. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. There's an old poem that said, to dwell above with those we love, oh, that will be glory. But to live below with those we know, that's another story. But anyway. Okay. But here, I just want to say a couple of things about this thing. Years ago, my dad, who was a farmer over in Lee County, approached me when I was visiting him. I was living in Massachusetts at the time. And he said, I want you to go with me to see a friend. He said he's on his deathbed, and he has not accepted Christ. He knows about Christ, but he has not made his peace with God. And I want you to go talk to him. And I'm thinking, why me? And this guy was very bitter because I guess what had happened is his relatives had cheated him out of a lot of money. It got him to sign a paper when he wasn't really doing that well. He ended up living in a little one-room apartment with I don't think he had a stove. He had like a hot plate. And so I go over there and I ask him, would you like to come to the Lord? He said, no, I can't do that because I can never forgive the people that did this to me. And I thought, oh, God, I don't blame him. How are we going to deal with this? So I was praying my head off. I said, well, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you one thing first. Forgiving somebody doesn't mean you've got to say, oh, that wasn't any big deal. They didn't do anything wrong. You don't have to agree with what they did. You can still say it was a terrible thing. It was an awful thing. But, you know, you still need to forgive. And I told them a story about the man whose child was really sick. And Jesus asked him, "Do you believe I can heal you, your child?" And his answer was, "Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief." And I told this man, I said, what he was really saying is, "Lord, I believe as much as I can, but you need to help me with what I can't." And I said, can you do that? Can you forgive as much as in your power and try to, and ask God to help you with the rest? He said, "Well, I can do that." And so we prayed that kind of prayer, and he accepted the Lord, and he died a few days later. But sometimes forgiving and loving, we think we've got to have this feeling. And it has nothing to do with whether you feel like it. It has nothing to do with condoning what was done. The third thing, it doesn't mean that you have to trust the person. I need to hear an amen right now.
Amen.
Jesus didn't trust everybody he loved. He knew what was in the heart of men. He knew what Judas was going to do. So loving somebody doesn't mean you want to buy a used car from them. Amen. Okay. N.T. Wright, he's a great theologian. He has a podcast called Ask N.T. Wright Anything. And somebody wrote in and said, "What am I to do with obeying the commandment, honor your father and mother, when my father and mother are really despicable people?" I thought it was interesting how he answered it. He says, well, in some ways the word honor means what Paul meant by helping take care of them in their old age, honor them with taking care of them. And he said, my advice to you is, even if you don't feel it, treat them as if you loved them. By your actions, treat them with love, even though you may not have the feeling. And I think there's a lot of truth there, that forgiving and loving isn't this emotional thing. It's a decision. I'm going to forgive you because Jesus forgave me, and he said to do it. And again, sometimes the hardest people to forgive are those who should know better, Christians, so-called Christians, in the body of Christ. Let me read you one or two more verses, and then I want to do something else. This is 1 John chapter 2, verses 9 through 11. This is what John said. If we say that we are in the light, yet hate others, we are in the darkness to this very hour. If we love others, we live in the light, and so there is nothing in us that will cause someone else to sin. But if we hate others, we are in the darkness. We walk in it and do not know where we're going because the darkness has made us blind. Over in chapter 4, he hits it again in verse 7. John says, "Dear friends, let us love one another, because love comes from God. Whoever loves is a child of God and knows God." Over in verses 19 and 20, he says, "We love because God first loved us. If we say we love God but hate others, we are liars, for we cannot love God whom we have not seen, if we do not love others whom we have seen. The command that Christ has given us is this: whoever loves God must love others also." On this podcast, way back in episode 31, we had an interview with a person who, in my opinion, is maybe the greatest Christian I've ever known, Pastor John K. Summers. And we got very close with him. But this was a man who had been a pastor for decades. But he was at a service and during that big revival we had in Anderson, Indiana. And my friend Ray Renner, who was just out of Vietnam, brand new Christian, was at the altar and he read this verse to someone. If we do not love others whom we have seen, blah, blah. For we cannot love God whom we have not seen if we do not love others whom we have seen. So this pastor overheard my friend reading that verse at the altar to someone else, and his heart became broken because he had great animosity and even hatred toward his father, who had been very physically abusive to him growing up. And he had gotten to the point where he was kind of proud of himself that he didn't hate him any longer, but he just didn't care anything about him. But here, Ray Renner was reading this verse. How can we say we love God whom we can't see if we don't love those who we can see? So this led to John Kay having an amazing encounter with this father that he hated. And I want to pick it up and play just an excerpt of that interview that we had with John Kay. And this talks about the night the day his father pulled a pistol on him.
And so the next day he came out, caught me out front. He came home. He caught me out front, and he pulled his .38 caliber pistol on me. He had tried once before to kill me with dynamite, and I had lived through that. But my mother had told me, I want you to be careful around your father. So she suspicioned something, but he came out that day and pulled the .38 revolver and pushed it into my tummy, and I can still feel that. And he said, "I'm going to kill you." And I said, "Hurry up and pull the trigger, because I won't have to look at your ugly face anymore." And he began to shake a little bit and turned around and left, didn't pull the trigger. And that made me, I hated, I thought he was the worst person I had ever known in my whole life. And that stuck with me through years. I could hear those words. And even today, I can hear those words. But all of that ended when I took the initiative. And only God spoke to me about that initiative, because I was a minister. Here I was preaching the gospel and had a heart full of hatred for my father.
John Kay, tell me about finding your dad that day.
All right. I knew he lived somewhere in Marion County, which was north of us, maybe 50 miles, the city of Marion, and I knew that I knew he had lived on a farm in a place called Treaty. That's all I knew. But I knew that he had also, that was years ago, and that he had moved, because when I had, years before, I had seen him on his farm, and he rejected me there. Then I drove to Marion, to the city of Marion, and I went to the post office to see if they could tell me. I said, "Can you tell me where my father lives?" Gave them his name. They said, "Well, we cannot give you that kind of information." So I came out of the post office, and there was a police car parked out in front. And I went to him and I said, "Could you tell me where my father, do you know my father, or could you tell me where he lives?" He said, "What's his name?" I gave him the name. I said, my father's name is John W. Summers. He said, "Dick Summers?" I said, "Yes, that's his nickname." He said, "He's a fiddler, isn't he?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I know where he lives. I'll take you to him." So I followed the police car out to the edge of Marion, to the southeastern edge, almost to Jonesboro. And we drove up in an addition called the Delmar Addition. And he pointed to the house, and he drove on. I pulled into the drive of this house. And I got out of my car, and nervous, shaken, and I went to the door and knocked on the door. And his wife came to the door. Of course, she had never seen me and didn't know me. And she opened the door just about 6 inches, and I said, "Is my father here?" And I heard her say, "Dick, it's your son." And he said, "Tell him to come in." Real rough like. So I stepped inside the door and just stood there inside the door. And he was sitting across his living room smoking a cigarette. He was sitting over on the far corner. And I just said, "Dad, I came today to tell you that I have always hated you my entire life. I despised you. And I want to ask you to forgive me." And he just leaped out of that chair, literally, and came across the room. I don't know what he did with the cigarette. But he came across, running across the room, and fell into my arms and said these words. "Oh God," he said, "I never let you love me." And that ended the conflict. The war was over. And for the first time in my life, I hugged my dad. I had never heard him say, "I love you," or "I care about you." I only suffered abuse, severe physical abuse and mental abuse. His favorite saying to me was, "You will never amount to a D thing." And so I came to believe that growing up. And now, for the first time, I felt love for my father. And I traced it back. I said, I thought he owed me an apology. It was my opinion that I had not ever done anything to him. I didn't deserve all of the bad times. And yet I was stricken with guilt after that experience on February the 2nd there at the altar at South Meridian, stricken with the guilt that I was a liar, I was not truthful, and that my dad would never apologize to me. It was my responsibility to take the initiative and apologize to him. That began a good life, and I worked with him, helped him in the fields and his farm after that.
You know, Brian, we play a song that I wrote way back in the 70s called "There Goes a Real Christian Man." Well, that takes Christianity beyond just reading a Bible verse and putting legs on it. And the leg is to forgive and to love. And the rest of that story is that eventually my friend John Kay had his father move in with him, and he lived at his house for several years before his death, and he came to the Lord. He had been an atheist. He came to the Lord, and it ended up with my friend preaching his father's funeral and just a wonderful reconnecting. And it was all because he heard that verse, "How can you say you love God whom you cannot see if you don't love who you can see?" I love that story. So how do we wrap this up tonight? Simply, I guess, if Jesus said it, we need to at least get on our knees and say, "God, help me. Teach me to love. Teach me to forgive." Jesus said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me." And so we're all students in this very difficult commandment at times to obey, and especially to get over the scars and the wounds. But God's bigger than that. And he basically ended his talk in the upper room with just pounding that in.
you guys have got to get along. You've got to love each other. By this, people will know you're my disciples when they see people who love each other. So that ends 3 weeks of you listening to the great Lorenzo pontificate on scriptures. We're going to go back to some interviews after this, but I just thought that was so important to look at these things. I want to sing a song now that I wrote many years ago, and I don't even remember the circumstances, but it was after there was some very tense time with someone. And I wrote this song that I sat down at the piano the other night, and I think Keith Hamrick played the brushes with me. This is called A Family Again.
Words have been said, judgments have been made. Some of them right, some of them wrong. Most of them don't even matter that much at all. We've seen each other from the outside, not seen the view from within. Isn't it time we begin to put that sort of thing to an end? Isn't it time we become a family again? We've grown distant and cold since the days of way back when. You are my brother and you are my sister, and we make the family of God. Isn't it time we begin to act like a family again? We're not the same, we come from separate worlds. Sometimes we differ, fail to agree, yet God lives in us both. Wouldn't it be sad to let some other thing come between our common bond? Why don't we bury the past, my friend, and act like a family again? Isn't it time we become a family again? We've grown distant and cold since the days of way back when. You are my brother and you are my sister, and we make the family of God. Isn't it time we begin act like a family again? You are my brother and you are my sister, and we make the family of God. Isn't it time we begin? Isn't it time we begin? Oh, isn't it time we begin? Act like a family again.
Well, I told you earlier in the episode that for those of you who may have been horrified that I picked, of all people, Johnny Cash to sing the Irish favorite, Danny Boy, when you've heard it by Irish tenors and all kinds of other people, I want to play as our last song another version of it by a singer that I think is just incredible. And it's the great late Eva Cassidy singing Danny Boy. That's our show for tonight. I'm going off to Ireland in a few days, but I'll be back with a lot of new interviews before long. And my friend Brian will be at the microphone the next 2 weeks to introduce the shows. I just found out a few minutes ago that Brian's lovely wife, Karen, who's here with us tonight, doesn't like Danny Boy, and I just played it 2 times on this show. But, you know, I'm going to Ireland, so I'm trying to get in the mood. But it's been great to do the show tonight, and great to hear the tape of my wonderful mentor, John K. Summers. So let's go out with a little Babbie Mason, who sort of underscores what we talked about tonight. God bless.
Love is patient, love is kind, love is humble all of the time, not easily angered.
and my 88 friends, I will sing you a song.